Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Thank you, God, for this opportunity. Thank you to all of you. And wow, this is sweet.
It's imperative that we make sure that every child, regardless of zip code, gets that opportunity. And she has not been a friend of public education.
Well, I think you get a small portion there. The bump stocks have only been used once in one shooting, but it was an awful, awful shooting. That needs to be done. If you do the no-fly, no-buy list, you've taken care of another segment. So I think there's a number of things that we can do. And if we do them all, I think we'll make a difference.
Let me be very, very clear. I have never discussed with Christian Dawkins paying DeAndre Ayton to attend the University of Arizona.
And joining us to talk about the results from the special primary election in the 8th Congressional District and look ahead to the general, as well as the controversy surrounding the U of A men's basketball team, are Mike Noble, chief pollster and managing partner at OH Predictive Insights, and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start with the 8th District. It seemed like leading up to primary day on Tuesday, it was a two-person race between Debbie Lesko and Steve Montenegro. Mike, it didn't really turn out that way. Montenegro came in third, basically tied for second, third with Phil Lovis.
Correct. When you saw that race, there was a lot of controversy that came out at the end of the race, but it was interesting because Arizona were heavily in early voting state, about 80% of the likely electorate votes that way. So a lot of the die was already cast in that race, and it was interesting when you look at the postmortem on the numbers is that actually that news, if you looked at how it impacted the vote, actually
the news of the texting scandal,
the texting scandal,
Steve Montenegro,
and then of course Lesko
campaign
later,
campaign finance
is actually when you look at the numbers, actually only 1 out of 8 of those folks that voted in the election were actually affected by that actually had that information when they voted. The other 7 of 8 didn't. Regardless, though, the numbers, I mean, Lesko actually absolutely dominated in her home area in Sun City, where that older voting population is. So, I mean, she, it was over before it started.
So should we take from that former Senator Steve Montenegro was maybe never really as far up in the polls as we thought he was?
Correct. There were some polls that were put out there that I would disagree with, and then we polled, though, of course, it was not what they were making it out to be, because you look at the numbers, and the race was over 2 weeks before Election Day, but they just didn't know it yet.
Sam, would you expect that now that Senator Lesko has moved on to the special general election, do you expect that the campaign finance controversy will continue to dog her going forward?
I mean, it definitely is a big issue that needs a little bit more exploration. And I think that media and voters were largely distracted by a different scandal. But it wasn't the only scandal in the GOP primary. And the scandal-free Democratic primary brought forward Dr. Tepperneni, who I think is going to be very strong heading into the general election here and the special election. And what's interesting here is that we're even talking about a general election conversation in Congressional District 8. I mean, this is a district that former Congressman Franks won handily every election except for his first one with a very crowded primary. So the fact that we're here, I think, is a moment. And, State Senator Lesko has some questions to answer on the campaign finance angle.
Realistically, do you think that Harold Tepperneni has any chance of winning that general election?
So I think that it depends. There's even in the short amount of time between now and the general election, I mean, there's a new news cycle every 6 minutes. I don't need to tell you guys that. So I think that there's a lot that could happen here. But we've seen special elections trending more and more towards the Democratic opponents all across the country and further away from the president. And State Senator Lesko was very proud to receive a phone call from President Trump praising her for her election. So I think that it'll be difficult to separate her fate from the president's. And I think his fate is going to be in question over the course of the next month as this election rolls out.
Well, and there's a new campaign finance complaint now, a federal one against Debbie Lesko. This is all about, of course, the $50,000 that was transferred. She transferred from her state reelection campaign to a federal super PAC. The state complaint was dismissed, but now there's this one. And this is this kind of building up for for the fall election, I wonder. What are your views on that?
I would say that, you know, when you look at that, it's a paperwork issue. I mean, it's a campaign finance is kind of voters would look at it as a paperwork issue compared to like the Montenegro, which is obviously very salacious and also for a very conservative family values district. That's an issue. When you look at that, I mean, everything was legal. The law was followed. If you don't like it, change the law. And so when you look at, not saying it's right or wrong, but that's where it currently sits. And when I look at this race, to say that's competitive, I really don't believe that, because you look at the Cook partisan voting index rating, and it has AZ08. It's an R plus 13 district. And again, I mean, if their main plan of attack is to attack her on, let's say, campaign finance, I look at what really matters to voters out there, I think that would be number 8th on the list.
Well, and it's interesting because when we on Wednesday morning we had both Senator Dolezko and Dr. Tipernany on the show, and we asked Dr. Tipernany, will you be making this an issue? And she didn't really say that she would. Right. It seemed like education maybe was a bigger deal to her. Of course, Senator Dolezko sponsored the school voucher expansion bill. Sam, would you expect that to be sort of the line of demarcation between the two?
Definitely. I mean, I think education is on everyone's minds, voters, lawmakers alike at every level of government. So I think the campaign finance issue is one that's fresh and it's new, and I think probably is paid attention to in the media and in the kind of the chattering class. But I think more than anything, it's going to be a referendum on education. And as you mentioned, Ms. Lesko is a champion of the school voucher scheme, and Dr. Tipernany is a strong supporter of public education.
When you look at federal issues for voters, education is not as high up on the list. When you look at Arizona, obviously in the last 2 years, it's been front and center with the issues we've had here. So I would say that education is number one issue for Arizona voters, because you look at independents and Democrats, it's number one on their list. But for Republicans, it's number 3 on the list. But remember, it's a Republican-led, portion, but then also the independents. So, again, I still think absolutely the advantage is to Lesko. And unfortunately, it's just it's not a Roy Moore situation. So I think it's going to be it's a very big uphill for Tipernany to climb.
Right. And is there enough time? I mean, that's the big question, right? This is so quick. And Harold Tipernany is a name that no one knows and many people don't know how to pronounce, even though she made that video. Do you think there's enough time?
I think that is definitely a question. It is a shortened timeline to get a message out. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the Democratic primary was scandal-free. And there's a lot of opportunity here for that base of voters to have clear eyes going into the general. And there's still a lot of confusion happening in the GOP primary and who's emerged and some outstanding questions. So it definitely is a shortened timeline. But I think that if there is a year for it to happen, this is the year. Because as Mike mentioned, it is an R plus 13, according to Cook. But the online outlet Vox has done some analysis of special elections. And actually, Democrats are plus 13. 33 on special elections right now. So I'm not saying that all of the cards are going to align, but it wouldn't necessarily be an earth-shattering moment for Dr. Tipernany to be Congresswoman Dr. Tipernany.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Mike mentioned that this is not really a Roy Moore situation. And in that instance, you had, to some extent, national Democrats coming to Alabama. You had an entire state also, and you had outside groups pouring a lot of money into that race. Are we seeing anything like that on behalf of Dr. Tipernany? I mean, are there outside groups that are willing to spend money on her in this race?
I think the money question is one that we'll have answered over the course of the next couple of days and weeks. But the outside validators, I think, would actually backfire in a district like CD8. If Dr. Tipernany is going to be successful, she's going to do that on her own name and on her own record and on her own ideas.
I think that I think it's true, with the shortened timeline, you looked at all these campaigns, no one really had a clear cash advantage. Maybe, one raised more than the other, but it wasn't significant, because typically in a congressional primary, the top candidate will usually raise about $1 million in that time, and they weren't even close to that. So I think this will heavily be decided. Both campaigns really won't have a cash advantage. It's really about the outside spending. But remember, if you're an outside spending group, it's like betting, right? And so when you look at it, you look at your odds, and when you look at the odds of that, it's a heavy, and yes, I'm not saying a lot of things can happen, right, from now until Election Day. However, when you look at the odds right now, I don't think you're going to see a lot of people on the left really jumping in unless they got cash to burn. burn. And that's, I wish I was in those shoes, but you know, it just, I don't really see that. And of course, Republicans, they're going to want to be, I think the special interests are going to be betting on who they probably think has the advantage, which is obviously Lesko based on the numbers. So I think those are the indicators to watch. But you know, if someone comes in and drops $2 million, you know, that's something that will move the needle.
Do either of you think that either of the candidates may be playing the, I don't want to call it the long game, because we're still talking about November, so it's not that long, but this seat will obviously be up again in the regular midterms in November. So, Sam, for example, if Hyrule Tippernenny loses in the special general election, do you think she can maybe use that experience and maybe getting out and meeting voters and maybe boosting her name ID to maybe try to do a little better even if she doesn't win in November?
I mean, I think it's possible. I mean, definitely we talked about how there's a long time just in the month that we have until Election Day. You know, November seems like a decade away at this point. So a lot can definitely happen. And I think that we'll see some of the same characters that were in both primaries emerge for the November race, regardless of how it turns out later this month.
No, I second that.
Mike, would you think that there will be, assuming that Senator Lesko wins the general in April, would you imagine that you would not have a primary coming up in August?
Oh, you know, it's funny. Arizona and GOP primaries compared to Democrat primaries, it is so rare to find uncontested primaries. You're going to see, obviously, the party, you know, the state party really work to clear the field since they just came out of an expensive, you know, and I don't think, and I believe this statement, I don't think there's anything more visceral out there than a very competitive GOP primary in Arizona. I mean, as we saw in this one, they can make a lifetime movie out of this.
That is Mike Noble, chief pollster and managing partner at OH Predictive Insights. We're also joined by Sam Richard of Creaso Partners. This is the Friday Newscap. More ahead in just a minute. Good morning. This is the Friday Newscap on the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Lauren Gilger. I'm Mark Brody. Also in studio with us, Sam Richard of Creaso Partners and Mike Noble with OH Predictive Insights. Guys, the other big, big story this week in Arizona is what's going on in Tucson with the U of A men's basketball program. Head coach Sean Miller apparently caught on an FBI wiretap discussing a payment to a star freshman player. He sat out one game coaching over the weekend. He now coached last night. The U of A won that game. Sam, what are the implications of all of this going forward, both for the U of A and I think maybe more broadly for the Board of Regents and Arizona's public universities?
Yeah, so there are a lot of pieces here to this story, but I think for my part, I want to focus a little bit on the Board of Regents because, you know, they're just coming out of a previous legislative session where they had a large fight on their hands for some construction bonding that they are working through. There's also all sorts of conversations around campus safety, and I know that we'll talk a little bit about a piece of that later in the show, but, you know, there's also talks about campus free speech and some ideas around there. So, you know, adding, you know, these types of high level, very visible personnel issues to the mix is really kind of putting them in this awkward situation where, you know, are we protecting, you know, this because it's a very frankly profitable program for the university, or are we really have the best interests of our students in mind?
Mike, does this put the Regents in kind of a tough spot? Because obviously the U of A basketball program is wildly popular, especially in Tucson. But at the same time, they have a responsibility to protect the integrity of the university, of the system. And, you know, to be clear, they have said that they don't have any evidence that anything bad happened. They're continuing to look into it. The university's continuing to look into it. But it seems like it would maybe put the Regents in kind of a tough spot.
So I have a theory about this, and that as my theory is, just as an outsider looking in, is that if you put it, let's say it was a different organization, let's say officer-involved shooting or something along those lines, right? Anyone that is under any type of investigation standard is, you know, their options were to fire, suspend, or retain, correct? Mm-hmm. They chose not to suspend, which normally with this, because they don't have all the information yet, it's ongoing, and so I think with the practical, logical thing would have been to go ahead and suspend him until the results come out to protect the university as a whole. But with March Madness right here, U of A is one of the top teams in the country. And also, I think they're very passionate about their programs down there. And I think that, you know, I think they put themselves in a really tough spot because think about it. I mean, they've gone all in on their coach. If it comes out that he is in fact, guilty of those things, I mean, it's going to be terrible for the university as a whole. And it's not just that. There's a lot of other things going around in that program, not just this one scandal. So for them as a brand, as a university, I was actually very surprised to see that they let him continue instead of suspending and seeing come out, because frankly, that would have been the logical and safe and smart thing to do.
Well, what do you think this might do? I mean, we're not going to get into X's and O's of a college basketball game here, but what do you think this does? I mean, we're talking about, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids here who are trying to concentrate when one of their teammates is, being discussed on an FBI wiretap. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the Wildcats are in the top 25. How does this affect them?
Well, one, I don't think many of their teammates are probably accepting phone calls from them. That's safe to say. But no, I just think it does put them in a really tough spot. It's a distraction. And, but again, I think they should have suspended. But, you've seen the monetization of college sports. And that's a whole other subject of, whether or not these folks should be, paid or anything else. It's just, but again, as a university, but as the Regents, I just am surprised. You just think it would have been, protect the group and not the one.
How much can they do, though, without evidence, right? So this was one report from ESPN, one source, right? And I wonder, do these things ever become, is there ever proof, I wonder? I've learned this week that this is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that as a Sun Devil, I'm just grateful that everyone in Tucson now hates ESPN more than ASU, even if just for this week. But I think that you bring up a good point. A lot of this immediate reaction, mine included, was based on a single-sourced, single story. So, there's definitely more information gathering that needs to take place. So I think that the Board of Regents did make the correct decision in saying that they needed to gather more facts. I think I also agree with Mike, though, that maybe a little bit more time off the court as this information was being gathered would be good. So while I agree that their posture was correct, I think that Coach Miller probably shouldn't necessarily be the face of the team at this moment.
Sam, you'd brought up earlier school safety as something that universities had been dealing with, obviously a huge topic going forward with the students at Stoneman Douglas High School coming back to school this week, a few weeks after the shooting there last month. And Senator Jeff Flake has been talking about some possible changes to gun laws he'd like to see, dealing with bump stocks, dealing with age requirements. Mike, do you get the sense that anything is going to change?
It's tough because Washington, because of tribal politics, which is a term many probably are not as familiar with, but you're starting to hear more and more because it's absolutely true of how partisan we become. But then you have, Senator Flake and Democrat Feinstein walking out of a meeting with Trump, and they're sponsoring a bill that would make, 21 the minimum age to purchase an AR-15, AK-47, or rifle. And think about it. You can buy a handgun if you're 21 and older, but you can't buy below. But then, of course, you can buy an AR-15 if you're 18 to 21. It's just, again, I think there might be some things that thing seems like a common sense solution. I think that we can both. It's just trying to see. I hope something gets done on this in a bipartisan way, because it'd be great to see. I think there's a lot of middle ground between Democrats and Republicans, and this one, I think is pretty obvious, and so I would love to see. I think everyone would love to see, the federal government or Congress to actually agree on something would be great.
Right, but after what happened with the DACA students, the Dreamers, we were promised a deal, mm-hmm. right? Never came about. Do you have any faith, Sam, that this is going to go anywhere?
No, I mean, I think if past performance is any indication of future results, the president is really not that great of a deal maker. And I think the other thing that brings me concern, while I have great respect for Senator Flake, he's not returning to Congress. And I think that some of those incentives are just changed. In fact, Congressman Pat Toomey has also been very vocal about gun reform of Pennsylvania, but he's, not indicated that he's going to be returning to Congress either. So some of those hooks and hinges that these individuals might have with the outside lobby groups like the NRA just aren't there. So I think the groundswell is going to be coming from these amazing students out of Stoneman Douglas High School. Groups like Moms Demand Action and Gabby Gifford's group are really leading the charge on really making sure that there's enough outside pressure to overwhelm the conversation with some real necessary common sense solutions. And I just want to say one thing, that there is a conversation happening at the legislature about what can happen here at the state capitol. And Speaker Mesnard actually said something very interesting and very enlightening, that, you know, we all value the First Amendment, but there's been a lot of shared understanding that you can't stand up in a crowded movie theater and yell fire, right? So there are some things that we can do while protecting the sanctity of the First Amendment, and then now let's have conversations around protecting the Second Amendment while putting some safeguards around that. And I think that's where the conversation's headed.
Well, and also this week we've seen private companies, right, making decisions to do things that Congress isn't doing. We saw Dick's Sporting Goods, we've seen Walmart, we saw L.L. Bean, some airlines and rental car companies are doing away with discounts for NRA members. Mike, is this something that we should expect to see more of, that in some way business is almost leading the way on policy?
Well, I think we find, you know, compared to, an expanded government, I think, you know, especially us as Republicans, we believe in small business and the right. And I think, you know, why not? I mean, if you're not seeing leadership on those other levels, I mean, those businesses have to make decisions based on not only their ethos, their culture, but also what they think is also the right thing to do. So I think you're seeing, I think it's great to see that, and I think others will come up. And let's be honest, why you have Flake and Toomey on that, they don't have, the NRA lobby is extremely powerful, especially if you're in safe districts. If you're in a safe district as a Republican and you are going against the NRA, they're going to funnel lots of money. And again, they're going to use that, and you're going to really have a fight on your hands because a lot of those folks, you know, re-election is usually forefront of their mind.
All right. Sadly, we'll have to leave it there, guys. That's Mike Noble, Chief Pollster and Managing Partner at OH Predictive Insights. Sam Richard, also here of Creosote Partners. Thanks for coming in, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.